We look at primary results, the last part of our program. Professor Jeanine Perry, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Arkansas, Director of the Arkansas Poll, is joining us. Again, she's been on before. Professor Perry, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us. And also, Professor Joseph Stewart is joining us, Professor and Chair in the Department of Political Science at Clemson University in South Carolina. Professor Stewart, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, sure. Happy to do that.
Yeah, great to have both of you here. Let's start with Arkansas, where it was fairly close. I'm not sure what the final numbers are, but Blanche Lincoln survived that challenge, and it was a strong challenge, wasn't it?
It was a strong challenge, and mainly because the labor unions organized across the country to try to defeat her, to try to take out this centrist Democrat, whom they saw as in the way of many of their favorite proposals of late, although they'd supported her in the past. And all told, I think the estimate now is the unions alone spent at least $10 million trying to defeat her and, of course, backing the candidate who was, and still is, Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, who they recruited actively into the race. And we think it looks like the final outcome it's going to be about 52-48.
52-48. And that's a lot of money to put in that race, isn't it?
It's an awful lot of money to put in the race, and it's interesting. I mean, I've fielded some other national media calls this morning about what it means for the unions, and I think in some ways they inoculated themselves against failure in the sense that they said one of their major goals here was simply to show that they can make a mess for Democrats who, you know, may take them for granted, and they certainly did that. This was no mean feat for Lincoln, at least by her reports. Her coffers are very, very low indeed. She goes into a general election, which is sure to be extremely difficult, battle-weary and bloodied. So it's interesting. They certainly did that. On the other hand, right, their guy got fewer votes than she did, and I think that cannot be ignored. And in that sense, it's a pretty significant defeat for the unions after a substantial investment.
Right. And so are her chances of winning in the fall not very great right now?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, overwhelmingly, every poll that's been done to date that I've seen anyway showed either her or Halter losing by double digits to the Republican nominee, and that's a guy named John Bozeman. Been in the U.S. House up here in the 3rd Congressional District for 9 years. He came out of an 8-way primary race without the need for a runoff. So it's every bit the thundering elephant at this point. You know, on the other hand, I think now that there is a Democratic nominee, as often happens, right, in any state, not just Arkansas, I think you'll see the gap close fairly quickly, and in no small part, because below the presidential level, Arkansas remains a thoroughly Democratic state. We've only elected one Republican U.S. senator since Reconstruction. That was Tim Hutchinson in 1996, and he was fairly handily defeated in 2002 by the Democratic name brand in the form of Mark Pryor. So I don't think it'll be as tight a contest, as much of a blowout as it looks like in the polls right now, but it certainly won't be easy for Lincoln either.
Right. You had some goings on there in South Carolina, didn't you, Professor Stewart?
Oh, it's been an exciting year in South Carolina
right.
politics, starting when our governor got on the Appalachian Trail and wound up in Argentina.
Right.
all the way to the latest events in the last 2 weeks right before the election.
Yeah, refresh our memories, and some people probably haven't heard what's going on here. It's been quite something.
It has. And in the last 2 weeks before the election, let me preface it by saying this election was very close. The first Rasmussen polls in South Carolina showed that undecided was in a substantial lead. And none of the four candidates, serious Republican candidates, could break away from anyone else. And then in the last 2 weeks, Sarah Palin came in and endorsed Nikki Haley. Two different people have alleged that they have had, quote, inappropriate sexual contact with Nikki Haley, and she surged to the lead in the polls and barely avoided winning outright. I mean, she is in a runoff with Gresham Barrett, the congressman who gave up that seat to run for governor. But she won with about 40, or she led with almost 49% of the vote. Barrett only had about 22% of the vote. So she has clearly surged to the front. and it's hard to see how she could lose the race at this point.
Right. And she surged to the front after the allegations of sexual misconduct?
It started first with Sarah Palin's appearance, and Sarah Palin came to the state on the same weekend that the wife of the governor, Janie Sanford, endorsed her. So she gets the endorsement of the outgoing governor, Sarah Palin. She opened up about a 10-point gap at that point. And then the allegations of sexual misconduct or people alleging that they had sexual contact with her. And, that seemed to boost her campaign.
What's that all about?
Well, she immediately denied it. And I think it was seen as kind of I don't think the allegations were considered to be credible. And so the result is this was seen as being impolite. And, in South Carolina, you have to have manners.
Yes.
You may not be able to appeal to South Carolinians' morality, but you can always appeal to their manners.
True. It is, forgive my generalization, but it is a Southern thing, I would think. And this was pitted, you can chime in on this too, Professor Perry, as a big Tea Party race. Can we talk about other races where the Tea Party may have made inroads or not yesterday?
Go ahead. I think it's more relevant in South Carolina, so
yeah,
take it away.
In South Carolina, Haley is a lot of candidates are claiming affiliation with the Tea Party. Haley is one of the candidates that the Tea Party claims affiliation with, that they have openly supported her. They say she's one of us. I think a very large percentage of the people in the exit polls said that they were supportive of the Tea Party. And I think that's part of what helped boost her up to almost over the majority.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to take on California? There were some interesting races in California yesterday, too, where we've got the Hewlett-Packard chief executive, Carly Fiorini, who will probably be taking on now Senator Barbara Boxer, who appears to be vulnerable. It's one of those names you think of, well, she's been in the Senate forever and has a pretty strong national visibility. Why would she be vulnerable?
Well, it has to do, right, with what we've all been talking about, which is this kind of outside-the-beltway, anti-Washington drum that so many people have been beating. And I would argue we almost always are beating that drum every 2 years. But it does seem to be both louder and more persuasive, or it has been in a number of races so far, Blanche Lincoln's survival here notwithstanding. So I think that may well be, in Boxer's case, as in Lincoln's, what makes her both appear and probably actually be somewhat more vulnerable than she would be normally.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And the other thing to remember is that while Senator Boxer has the national name recognition, she's been vulnerable in each of her races. It's always been of some concern to her supporters of how she would do. So this is nothing new for her, just as in the Arkansas race with Senator Lincoln. A lot of people have underestimated her throughout her career.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Oh, well, I just think that a lot of people have always thought, oh, we don't think she can win.
Oh.
And she's proven them wrong. Mm-hmm.
She has repeatedly, beginning when she started her House career. She was in the House for just two terms, I guess, for 4 years. And she began that race by taking on her former boss in his own district. So her theme this year was One Tough Lady. She trots that out again every time she runs for reelection. And, folks come closer than I'm sure is comfortable for her. But she keeps, I think it's her own message. It's her positioning of herself as a key centrist in the Senate. And then often, of course, it's simply circumstances that allow her each time so far to beat back those challenges.
What kind of support did she get from Bill Clinton and from Barack Obama? I know they both supported her. How How so?
They did. And really, from the beginning, as it looked like she might get an inside challenge, a primary challenge from Bill Halter, if not someone else. But once it was Bill Halter, the Democratic establishment really lined up behind her. And that was one of sort of the interesting ironies here, is that in some ways, Democratic support for her felt like it was a little soft going into the election. Certainly, people were aware of the changed conditions and perhaps her increased vulnerability as a result. There were many progressive Democrats in Arkansas, and there are some in the state who were frustrated, indeed, with some of her votes. And then, of course, she had frustrated the right of the political spectrum as well. And a lot of those folks are independent voters who swing both ways. But she, all that said, I think that Bill Halter's entry into the race, because, and I think in some ways unfairly, the Democratic establishment does not like Bill Halter. And so there was sort of renewed enthusiasm for her as a consequence of low enthusiasm for him. Now, that translated right into endorsements, and it turned into television and radio advertising by both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And I think those are actually pretty critical factors in this outcome, probably because of the African-American vote. The African-American vote in Arkansas, African-Americans only 16% of the state here, so it makes us markedly different from most of the other southern states, and it makes it really hard for the black vote to have much leverage in statewide elections. They're just too small a portion of the electorate. But in a Democratic primary in a tight year, that can make a difference. And just really drawing inferences from the county-level election results, it looks like Bill Halter did very poorly, despite his and the union's efforts in black communities, and that Blanche Lincoln held very strong in those communities.
Oh, that's very interesting. Let's go to Nevada for a moment. Also kind of an interesting race there. Republicans are seeking to challenge her to Senator Harry Reid. I'm wondering how vulnerable he may be. And we do have, in that case, Sharron Angle, a Tea Party favorite. That's Sharron with two R's, defeating this former Assemblywoman Sue Loudon, who I believe, I've read stories about her, that she thought the solution to the health care debate would be that we would just barter things. You know, I'll give you a pig if you can give me a physical checkup.
I think in some ways Nevada is a great case study of, you know, the Tea Party certainly has demonstrated that it can exercise a lot of influence in a Republican primary. And really, right, that shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone. The difficulty, I think, is going to be, and it makes me think of Sarah Palin's endorsements, right, this round as well, and her appeal to Tea Party types, although she didn't endorse solely Tea Party types in this round. But it makes me, I think they're going to have to use tremendous caution and may even want to quiet down in some of the races, because a Republican primary electorate in most states, even conservative states, looks a lot different from a general electorate, right, where everybody sort of shifts to the center. And the Tea Party right now, together with Sarah Palin, aren't very well positioned, right, to make that kind of centrist appeal. So I think that they may really come on in this kind of thundering clamor right now, but I think when it comes to the general election, they're going to have to broaden their appeal, or they're going to look diminished in strength.
Mm, you agree with that? Want to add to that, Professor Stewart?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think in Nevada may be the classic case of this. I mean, South Carolina is so conservative that the Tea Party, I mean, the Republican nominee here is the presumptive favorite. But in Nevada, I suspect Harry Reid couldn't have picked a better candidate to run against. This will allow, I mean, of the two possibilities, that I think this will give Harry Reid a little bit more breathing room to run. Now, we don't know how much of this anti-Washington feeling will actually carry through. But given the possibilities, I think this was the best possible outcome for him.
Let's go to Wayne from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Kathleen. Good morning.
Hi, Wayne.
Great win last night. To get to this issue, you know, I'm kind of concerned. I consider myself part of the Tea Party movement. I am a conservative Republican. And I wonder, we're not all racist and bigots yet. The last guest we had on, Kathleen, kind of intimated that, well, we're really at the bottom of the barrel politically, and I think we have some legitimate concerns. And so I guess my question to you, both guests, I should say, is what is your perception of those of us in the Tea Party movement? Are we, in fact, just a bunch of nuts or racist bigots, as a lot of liberals claim that we are?
Professor Stewart?
Well, I would say no. My perception of the Tea Party movement would be it's not as homogeneous as a lot of people in the Tea Party movement would like to project it. That is, that my perception of the Tea Party movement is people who have various dissatisfactions with government, and those run across a broad range. And I think that's both one of the pluses and the minuses for the Tea Party movement, is that it really means different things to different people, even within the Tea Party movement. And I think it's one of the reasons that the Republicans have made a mistake by presuming that they will be the beneficiaries of the Tea Party movement, because I've heard people within the Tea Party movement say, look, we've been stabbed in the back as much by Republicans as we have by Democrats. So I think it's a very decentralized movement and just means a wide variety of things. I think different people make the mistake of kind of putting their own perception of it on when it's probably not that coherent a movement.
And that brings us almost to the end of the hour. So, Professor Perry, you're off the hook for that question.
Thank you.
Notice how you passed that along.
A valid point.
All right. Thank you both so much for being with us.
A pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Our guest, Professor Janine Perry, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Arkansas and Director of the Arkansas Poll, and Professor John Stewart, Professor and Chair, Department of Political Science at Clemson University. If you want some juicy write-ups about what was happening in those races we were talking about, you know, go read some news reports about it, because it's quite something. Well, I guess that's it for today. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour. It was a good hour, wasn't it? I think Jonathan is an interesting writer and guest, and down to earth, right? And thanks to Chrissy for on-air production, handling all the phone calls this hour. And thanks for all the phone calls this hour. Great conversations ahead. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.